We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, welcome in episode 83 of the BuzzBeat podcast. We're a new member of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Really excited to be doing that. Don't forget our home is queencityhoops.com. So make sure you're checking them out too. We've got a really special guest here tonight, Nate Duncan, who leads really one of the most popular, I would say, NBA podcasts across the landscape of the NBA, the Dunked On podcast with Danny LaRue. So we're really happy to have him. Nate, thanks for coming on tonight, and how you doing 25 games or so into the NBA season?
Yeah, the extra like week and a half now is significant that's been added to it. But I'm really excited to come on with you guys. Spencer, of course, is a yearly guest on my show for the Hornets preview, so I'm glad to return the favor.
No, absolutely, man. We're really excited. We're going to approach this pod more of, we're going to ask Nate some questions, just kind of a 10,000 foot view of where the Hornets are in this point in the season. If you listen to BuzzBeat, you're used to hearing kind of us recap the games and talk about, things that we're seeing on the court. This will be a little different. We're really going to look at where the Hornets are, look what they're going, what can they become this season, et cetera, et cetera. So on that note, and Richie and Brian are here with us, like always, but we're just going to jump right in if you guys are good with that. Nate, let's start here, because I think it's the obvious place to start with Charlotte is Kemba Walker, right? Like, he's been unbelievable this season. We had Chris Kroger, the radio voice of the Hornets, on before the season started, and he was like, look, guys, I think Kemba's going to have the best season of his career. I think we all kind of laughed at that a little bit. But on a 1 to 10 scale, like, how surprised were you of how good he's been so far this year?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? I mean, because when you look at that, especially early in the season, you say, okay, is it just fluky shooting, or is there something more fundamental here that we wouldn't have expect to have changed? So I would say at this point in time, especially because he's dropped off a little bit of late with the shooting, I mean, it seemed like very early on when, he was probably – for the first month or so of the season, just in terms of value, he was a top five player in the league. A lot of that was tied to the three-point shooting, especially that three-point shooting off the dribble. He had some really, really hot nights, and that's something that can happen. If he has that month, in March, then it doesn't get as much attention as if it's the first month of the season, right? We have this natural tendency to think, all right, it's a new season. He's done some work on his game. It's more easy to think of yourself as a first month of the season as a new normal than that this is a little bit fluky. So that was one where I was like, I was surprised he's able to shoot that well for a whole month, but it wasn't like out of the realm of possibility for me. So I'd say maybe like a six or a seven, and he seems actually, he's shooting now worse on threes than he had earlier in the season. If you look at the biggest box score to statistical difference with his performance, it's just that he's ramped up his usage so much more. I think he's gone from 27 to 31%. And so to be able to do that and maintain the efficiency is very good. And the Hornets have been a very good offensive team. And I think it's also really important that he's gotten so much respect from that first month of the season where he was shooting the ball so well and those very difficult three-pointers off the dribble, that I think that's changed the way that he's been defended. I'm not shocked by it, but I do think that overall, he's moved into maybe a little bit of a different tier, but we'll see how that shooting holds up the rest of the season.
Is there one skill, stat, whatever, that really sticks out to you that looks discernibly different just this season than maybe past seasons? I mean, one of the things I think he's starting to unlock is the, you know, how he can set up his teammates more and more when he gets into the lane, excuse me, which he's doing, I mean, constantly at this point. I think that part has stuck out to me. Anything really stuck out to you about Kemba this year?
Yeah, to me, it's just been the difficulty of the three-pointers. I mean, so, to be shooting the percentage that he was, especially early in the season, I mean, he's probably one of the best guys in the league at coming off the screen, even when it's not set that high out on the floor, and have a guy on his back, and he's just going to pull it, even if the guy's, like, right there on his back. He doesn't care. You know, I think he's traded off some long twos, which, you know, because a lot of times you'll see, okay, a guy comes off the screen, the guy's on his back, he's going to take a couple dribbles in to try to get a little bit more space and elude him, whereas Kemba would be like, hey, guy's on my back, I don't care. Like, let him try and block my shot and foul me. I would love for him to do that. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of just, you know, drifting forward across the line as he shoots it. It looks like a very difficult shot, but, like, he was making those. So I think that was the biggest thing that popped out to me, of just the quality of the three-pointers, then being able to make those as well.
Yeah, it's to me, like, when he you know, takes that shot where it looks like he's crowded, almost floating forward, maybe a little out of control, maybe that's too strong, but it's like he knows he's put the official in a really tough spot, because he knows that defender is chasing so close behind him that the worst case scenario is he's going to get undercut, or there's going to be some kind of contact and he's going to the line. It's like trusting that thought, but it is amazing. Nick Batum used to think he was really good at that too, but that's worn off over time.
Yep.
Nate, what on this team, the greatest strength on this, what is obviously a flawed roster in a lot of ways, right? But, like, what do you, when you watch the Hornets, and I don't know how much you've seen of them this year, but what do you see that, man, this is a strength that will play against anybody in the league?
Well, one of the things that I was very curious to see was how much of their turnover avoidance was due to Steve Clifford. That was, in theory, part of his profile. Defensive rebounding is something that, you know, Clifford really prized and you know, maybe deteriorated a little bit as they went smaller over the years. But, you know, now they're down to 19th in defensive rebounding. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, they used to really not foul. That's keep teams out of transition. They're playing a little faster now. But, yeah, avoiding turnovers is the one thing that really has translated. And that's what's made them, other than getting to the foul line, you know, has made them be a solid offense, because they're that's the one thing that they're really elite at. And it's kind of the thing, that, probably the least sexy thing that shows up, right? The absence of a mistake is something that, as you're watching, you don't think like, oh man, that was just amazing turnover avoidance on that play. You know, like, it doesn't
get
to the foul line, offensive rebounding, like, that really pops out, right? But so many teams, like the Spurs are another one, right? You think, like, oh man, they're shooting all these mid-rangers. Like, how could they possibly be efficient? Well, they never turn it over. You know, they got LaMarcus and they got DeMar DeRozan. Those are two extremely low turnover players. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's impressive for the Hornets to have maintained that, you know, especially when you don't really think of anyone other than Kemba as a great offensive creator. And so usually when you have guys who aren't unbelievable creators, who might be a little stretched in those roles, that you see their turnover rate go up. And the fact that they've avoided that has been very impressive.
Hey, let me chime in here real quick, Spencer, because I think that's a great point, moving from a system from Clifford into a more up-tempo system with Borrego. I personally thought, you know, in the offseason, we talked about maybe some of the weaknesses that might come about. I thought turnovers could be a possible weakness, but clearly they're still first in the NBA in preventing that. So making that transition to a new offensive system and still maintaining some of those philosophies under Clifford is definitely great to see. And I think, kind of to add to this, the greatest strength of this team, which is completely different than years past, it feels really weird to say this, but the Hornets, like, depth in a way. Their bench play has been very, very good this season. They're top five in the NBA in scoring. And the feeling that we got in previous seasons when Kemba went to the bench, do you guys get that same feeling when Kemba goes to the bench this season? Because I don't feel the same sense of worry, like, okay, let's get Kemba back out as quick as possible. So I feel like that's a strength of the Hornets this season in terms of just some flexibility with the lineup.
Yeah, and I'll say this too. You know, when it comes to the turnover thing, and it was really funny, that you mentioned that, Nate, because the other night James Borrego is being interviewed, and I don't know who asked him the question, but he's like, do you know that you're first in the NBA right now in limiting turnovers? And he was like, maybe. He was like, I knew we were up there. I didn't know we were first. And he was like, well, was that really was that something you were nailing home before the season started? Because we know it was important to Steve Clifford. And he was kind of like, we talked about it. I mean, he was like, obviously, no, it wasn't one of our top priorities coming into the year. And so two things. Number one, it kind of speaks to what kind of players are on this roster. But number two, like, shout out Steve Clifford. Like, you coached this team for – you were in Charlotte for 5 years. You got this group to play a certain way, and it's obviously become a part of who they are, right, as players in the NBA now, and it's carried over. So I think that's cool that Borrego is like, this isn't one of my top priorities, but we're doing it as good as anybody in the NBA. And that's rare. Like, you don't see that very often.
Yeah, Kemba down to just 9.2% turnover rate this year. Like, that would end up – that's on pace to be the second lowest career turnover rate of his career, considering how high his usage is, you know, up over 30% and, you know, over 15 drives per game, and he dominates the ball. Like, you know, he sort of sets the tone. And the two things this team does well at, like, a top 10 rate, avoid turnovers and shoot threes from above the break. And I mean, he's sort of the engine for both of those things.
No doubt.
And even guys like, you know, Jeremy Lamb had this reputation of not being the headiest player, but, you know, he's got 6% turnover rates, right? I mean, Parker would turn it over at times in his San Antonio career. He's at 10%. Malik Monk, who's, you know, another sort of thought is like, oh, trigger happy rookie, second year player, not the smartest player, 10%, you know, that's very good as well. So they've gotten pretty good performances basically out of everyone on the roster who handles the ball, other than Batum from a turnover avoidance standpoint.
Nate, when you look at this team, and you probably have more to pick from with this question than the last, but the most glaring weakness that, you know, when push comes to shove at the end of the year, really held Charlotte back.
I mean, is bad luck a weakness, or perhaps crunch time execution? I mean, I'm always loath to, because those stats are so inconsistent from year to year, that it's hard to say, okay, this team has a skill in the clutch, this team doesn't. I mean, you look back at it, right? Like 2015-16, Golden State might have been the best clutch team ever, and then the year after that, they actually underperformed their point differential. And you know, Houston last year was unbelievable in the clutch. This year, you know, not really that much. You know, certainly no better than their overall point differential. It's you know, we've seen teams be really bad in the clutch and then come around. But, you know, that's been a Hornets bugaboo for quite some time in the last few years. You know, sort of similar to those Minnesota teams with Kevin Love early in the decade, where, you know, it was a team that, you know, it doesn't look like it'd be that great, but hey, their point differential is actually pretty good. But, oh, their record actually isn't that good because they haven't been that good in close games. So, I mean, have you guys seen consistent issues with the late game execution? I haven't watched every one of their games, but that makes you think there's something more to it than just the bad luck. I mean, I know at one point in time, Kemba was solid in the clutch. I mean, he was, you know, a little bit below average efficiency, but, you know, that's what happens during that period of the game normally. But then everyone else on the team, you know, just couldn't hit a three at that point in time. I mean, has that been the sole issue, or is there more to it than that?
I mean, I think the biggest issue is not only the personnel, but I also think the lack of creativity when it comes down to the late game situations. I feel like a lot of times the Hornets just lean on Kemba to kind of save everything, and you can't have that happen. The ball's got to move. Even if Kemba's the primary target in the clutch situation, it can't just be dribble out the clock and try to make something happen. And I think, you know, Tony Parker stepped up a lot this year in terms of clutch situations. And there's not a lot of guys that can get that last second shot. But I feel like it's not just the personnel. It's also the lack of creativity when it comes to actually drawing up something late. And Clifford had that issue. And not to say that Borrego has this issue, but it just seems like we lean way too heavily on Kemba. Clearly, he's our best player, but we got to get some movement going on late.
It's pretty crazy when you see, like, the clutch minutes usage rate. Kemba's at 46%, Tony Parker 26%, Lamb right around 15%, and everyone else, you know, close to 11 or 12%. And actually, they've been a little bit better in clutch minutes the last, like, week or two, including the win over Detroit. But it's, like, 64 clutch minutes for the Hornets this season, 114 field goal attempts, 53 of those have come from Kemba. As a team, the Hornets, 14 of 51 – in clutch three-pointers, 28%. Kemba's 10 of 25 on clutch three-point attempts, 40%. Everyone else, 4 of 26 on clutch three-point attempts, so 15%.
I think that's better. It was like 2 out of 20, I think, the last time I looked at it a couple of weeks ago. So they're 2 out of 6,
Yeah. And I mean, and the other thing, too, is like it's crazy to just see Batum being invisible out there during clutch minutes. He's played 35 clutch minutes.
He's a little more visible on your television in terms of the amount of space that he takes up. But he's not really visible in, like, you know, his actual statistical contribution. That's true.
That's a good point. But, like, under 7% usage in clutch minutes. He's 1 of 3 shooting in 35 clutch minutes without a free throw attempt in any clutch. No clutch free throw attempts this season. Like, it's, you know.
That's why they need
Booker out there in at the close games out for them. He's won some games.
I mean, last night was one of, I mean, just off the top of my head, it's one of the few times Batum has closed the game for this team recently. I think it was more because of defensive reasons. But, yeah, and I just think, to add to everything you guys said, because you pretty much answered it, but it's psychological, right? Like, everyone on the Hornets and on the other team knows Kemba's taking the shot or the action's coming from Kemba. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, it's different if you're John Wall or I'm blanking on another good comparison, right? And everyone knows you're going to have the ball in your hands, but they know there's a Brad Beal or a sniper, Otto Porter, you know, right there next. They can also beat you. The opposition always knows none of these other dudes on the floor, regardless of who's on the floor for Charlotte, want to take this shot in the clutch because they haven't done it in over 3 years now, right? Like, it's been the same stuff regardless of the coach. So I think part of it is very psychological, and that's ironic we're talking about it because maybe the Hornets overcame some of that last night with Lamb's shot from the wing, which wasn't a good look and not a good pass from Kemba, but Lamb splashed it. So maybe they got over some of that last night. I don't know.
Well, and back to that play, you know, we see this all the time. People – you know, players come off their own man to go double Kemba, regardless of the situation, if it's a pick and roll or not. They know that Kemba's the guy that's going to get it. And, you know, it was the greatest pass to Lamb, but the fact that he actually made that decision to pass it out to Lamb was a very good decision on Kemba's part.
In both games versus Detroit this year, at the end of the fourth quarter, Detroit has just sent a second guy to trap Kemba without a screener. Yeah. It happened last night, and it happened back in November, too.
But by the way, that's really ironic because part of why Dwayne Casey got fired was because he didn't double team LeBron James at the end of that game. So I guess he learned his lesson.
He did, yes.
So Nate, transitioning from more of a big picture view to like individual performances, what player outside of Kemba on this Hornets roster has most pleasantly surprised you this season?
Yeah, I think there's a few candidates. One would be just to get decent play out of Miles Bridges. You know, Ben Taylor was on my pod last night, and he was talking about that he was very impressed with his defense. And, you know, Bridges is shooting well enough from three-point range and, you know, great finisher around the rim. He's been pretty passable defensively. You know, good transition player, get some highlights. The hope is he could be switchable in time, and no one's really been talking about him, but just to get a wing player, anybody who can contribute at that point in the draft at age 20 is great. And, you know, I think he's someone who could be a stalwart for this team for a long time. And then Tony Parker I thought he was done. I thought that was going to be a terrible contract. It looked a little better when I can't remember if it was a non-guarantee or a team option for next year. But when that came through, but nonetheless, it kind of seemed like, you know, is this guy even going to give them adequate backup point guard play? And he absolutely has. I mean, he's the Hornets have a better net rating with him on the floor than they do with Kemba, which is pretty impressive. So he's really has provided a little bit more impetus on the bench. His usage is up. I mean, it's not unbelievably efficient, but, you know, for a bench guy on a team that doesn't have a ton of scoring threats outside of Kemba, I think that his stat line has been totally fine, and he's really has given them just a way to run the offense in a way they've been lacking since the Jeremy Lin year.
Yeah, the bench has been a mess since 15-16 with Jeremy Lin, and who would have thought that you know, 30-whatever-year-old Tony Parker was going to bring it back home. It's crazy.
Yeah, we're just going to say now, Cleaning the Glass has Parker and Kemba on the court together, almost 1.2 points per possession. Kemba shooting 50% on threes. 63% effective shooting with almost 200 minutes with Parker on the floor with him. under 33% shooting from deep, under 50% effective shooting without Tony Parker on the court this year. So probably getting to some more of those catch and shoot looks when Tony's out there to give them, another secondary creator who's looking to set up his teammates and get them easy shots too. And the number that really pops for me with Tony Parker, though, he's playing about 19 minutes a game. He's averaging, according to league tracking data, 10.5 drives per game. And he's shooting 56% on his drives this year. That's fifth in the NBA amongst players that average at least 10-plus drives per game. That's an amazing number. He and Kemba are two of eight guys averaging at least 10 drives per game this season in the NBA. It's crazy just how much, you know, the team Borrego is putting on those two guys to create offense. And I mean, I think at best going into the season, you were hoping for, you know, replacement level backup point guard status from Tony Parker, and he's given you a lot more than that. So for me, he's got to be the biggest pleasant surprise. But Lamb and Miles Bridges, there are cases to be made for those guys too.
And I think a case can also be made for MKG in just terms of changing that role from the starter to the bench and coming in and have a more defined role on the offensive side. It seems like last season he was just kind of put in the corner and he really didn't have much of a role. He's setting screens more often, diving to the basket, but it's crazy to think that coming off the bench actually made him a little bit more important to this Hornets team. Let's transition to the opposite end, and I feel like you might go to a certain player for this one, but who is the biggest disappointment on this Hornets team?
Yeah, well, it does seem that Nick Batum, just whether it's, and obviously there's the big contract, which, and the Hornets aren't to be blamed for giving that contract. They are maybe to be blamed for not having it decline instead of rise, because just due to tax issues and money, that contract wouldn't look quite as bad if it were declining. They had the option to do that with full bird rights on him, but that's water under the bridge now. But plenty of other teams were given that contract. But for Batum, I mean, he really doesn't seem to have taken care of his body. I mean, just looking at him, he's lost like all muscle definition, just not attacking, not getting to the basket. I mean, just this guy was supposed to be the number two creator on this team. And what does he have, like 14% usage or something right now? I mean, it's just, he hasn't really been able to make up for that by being a lot more efficient. I mean, you used to see him take, you know, a lot of those three-pointers going to his right off of screens. We don't see that as much anymore. We used to see him getting in the lane and set people up. I don't have those drive stats in front of me, but I'm guessing they're pretty miserable for him compared with where he was in that magical 15-16 year.
Yeah, I think he just disappears from games. And we talked about it, and we realized that, you know, he's a connector, he's a distributor on this team, but he's had his lowest assist total since 2011-2012. So he's clearly not, getting involved in the assist game either. And he has games where he shoots like three or four field goal attempts per game, and it's just like, were you even out on the court? But then he also has games against the Timberwolves not too long ago where like he was like ultra involved, and that's the type of Batum that we expected when he signed that contract, and it just seems like those are few and far between this year.
I mean, for whatever reason, the Hornets telecast cuts to him sitting on the bench quite a bit, and it's, and it's pretty obvious that he's not in a great place mentally, and he's not happy, and there's been all these excuses. Last year was because Dwight Howard was on the team, so that's why he didn't really know his role. And you know, the year before it was just kind of a mess, and he was injured for a lot of that year. And now, I mean, you look at this roster and you'd be like, oh, this looks tailor made for Nick Batum to have like a solid second or third role, especially with a guy like, you know, James Borrego, who's an outside of the box thinking, at least modern day head coach in the NBA. And Batum he's just a passive player. He has been since his rookie year. You know, he was a stand in the corner, shoot threes, and everybody was like, well, this guy needs a bigger role. He just needs to be more of a contributor in the NBA and more chances with the ball in his hands. I just don't think that he wants that role. He might say he wants it, but there's nothing from his body language and the way he plays offensively since I've seen him in Charlotte that suggests this is a guy who wants a heavy offensive role. And I'm happy to be wrong, but I mean, we're on season four now, and it's hard to see it.
Yeah, and a happy early 30th birthday, too, to Nick Batum as he turns 30 on December 14th. So it's hard to see this ship, you know, turning around and going in the right direction. You know, at best, he's sort of a spot-up shooter. That's really where he's been best served for Charlotte this year. But you know, that's just not providing them enough. And I think that's one of the reasons why, at least at the start of the year, they were so dreadfully underperforming their point differential in terms of wins and losses. And yeah,
here's some crazy bad Batum stats, by the way. 13.7% usage would be the lowest since his rookie year. And he was 22% and 21% those 2 years, the first 2 years of his Hornets career. And here's the one that's most ridiculous to me. 1.0 free throw attempts per game.
Yeah. Yep.
That's just insanely low.
That's like you're on your way out of the league kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, he's never been a high free throw attempt guy. I mean, even in that the good year that got him that contract, it was only 2.7. But I mean, one free throw attempt a game, I mean, that's just, you're getting fouled once every two games. That's insane.
Yeah, that screams passiveness right there, and that's kind of the key term we always apply to Nick Batum. And I feel like we discussed this guy enough on BuzzBeat, so let's try to go to something more positive here.
I did have a quick question for you though.
Go ahead.
I asked this on my show the other day. I never got a great answer for any Hornets Twitter followers, but why is Hernan Gomez not play more? I mean, I know the numbers with him on the floor aren't great. His individual box score statistics are good. I mean, does he just suck on defense? Is that what it is?
He does.
I think that's most of what it is. Mm-hmm. But and if you look at Frank's defensive numbers, Frank Kaminsky defensive numbers.
Shockingly good.
Exactly. We talked about this on our last episode recorded just 2 days ago. I could not believe how good they are. Not only are they good just when Frank's on the floor, but when Frank's on the floor with Malik Monk and Tony Parker, they're still way above league average, which is, I still have not wrapped my mind around that. And I'm not.
That can't continue, right?
I mean, right. Look, like, exactly.
He's competing, though. He is competing. Just watch him down there. He's not the best athlete, but he is competing. I mean, yeah, but no, I don't think it'll continue at that rate.
A big part of that is MKG, though, too. Like, 54 minutes with MKG out there, the Hornets, 84 points per 100 possessions. 150 minutes with Frank out there, no MKG, a little under 107 points per 100 possessions. So, I mean, look, that you can't just attribute that all to one guy, but that's a pretty significant difference hinging on, you know, what is clearly the Hornets' best, you know, perimeter defender, too.
Right, and MKG and Frank have not played many minutes together in the past because MKG has been in the starting lineup. So, you know, that is certainly a factor here. But I'm with you, Nate. Surprised. We were talking about it 2 days ago. I was like, I just can't believe this. I mean, I know MKG is a good defender, but something does not add up here, and it probably doesn't continue. But we'll see. But, Willie, like, Hernan Gomez, his offensive game is so sharp. It's well beyond his years, I feel like. His footwork is fantastic. He's shooting threes. He's making them this season. He's got a great feel around the game. He's patient around the rim. He's patient when he gets down there. He's good in pick and roll. Like, he does all these things offensively. And his, you know, you look at his contract and his cap hit, and you're like, God, I mean, and the Hornets have his rights. Like, this guy should be playing, right? And Frank Kaminsky's, you know, he's going to be a restricted free agent, probably on his way out the door anyway. So why is Willie not playing more? But I'll be the first to tell you, and I know that both of these guys will back me up, James Borrego has tried every freaking lineup in the book this season.
Yeah.
I mean, he's trying everything, and every time he tries something new, I think we're all scratching our heads a little bit. So,
I mean, he even played Biz over Hernan Gomez last week in the Minnesota game, which I was not stoked about to see. But that seems to have, I mean, again, one game sample, but in the second half against Detroit, it seemed like he did sort of like retake the second center position behind Cody. And the other thing to remember, too, is they're playing Marvin at the five so much this year. 150 minutes with Marvin Williams at the five, which has been, I mean, it's been a huge piece for the Hornets, especially on the defensive end. I don't think this run with Frank, although he shot 35% above the break threes the last seven games. That's fine. But like, yeah, it just seems like when Hernan Gomez, if he's assuming he is fully healthy, because I know he missed a few games with an injury, but, you know, I think that's going to be, you know, at best, Frank should be the fourth center on this roster, and which means he probably shouldn't see too many minutes unless there's significant time lost to injury.
And we always talk about how fragile he is, you know, mentally. And the fact that he went from like a 15th man on the bench, and then when Hernan Gomez was injured for a couple of games, and he came in, and he, like I said, he hasn't really looked back. But big picture stuff, looking down the road, I know that, Spencer, you go on preseason with the Dunked On podcast and talk about the ceiling and the floor of this team. Now that we're about 30 games in, Nate, where do you see this team finishing this year? Maybe the highest that they can finish in the playoff standings? And then maybe on the opposite end, how far do you think they could fall if everything you know, just didn't go as planned?
Yeah, I mean, I think the sixth seed would certainly be realistic. Mm-hmm. You know, I think you've got the top four in the East, although ironically enough, the Hornets actually have a better net rating right now than Philly. But you got the top four, and then now with Indiana getting Oladipo back, and you know this is without significant injury concerns popping up for these teams. But I think, you know, just based on the fundamentals, to me, Charlotte looks like the sixth best team in the Eastern Conference. That's where 538 projects them. It's kind of interesting, actually, with them 14-13 right now, plus 3.8 net rating, that 538 only projects them to finish at 500. With a 1.0 net rating. Has their schedule just been really easy early on? That's probably the reason for that, I'm guessing.
A lot of road games coming up, right?
Yeah, January. Very, very, very easy. Yeah, 2019 January does not bring a lot of friendliness.
So, but I mean, I think you also have to be really happy as a Hornets fan that the Pistons have lost six straight. You know, it seemed like they were kind of doing it with smoke and mirrors for a time, and obviously beating the Pistons and being a part of that, it helps. The Pistons are so injured right now as well. You think, and I don't think the Pistons have had like a West Coast swing yet or anything either. So that they, you know, you think the Hornets and Pistons will probably be neck and neck. And then, I mean, basically everyone else in the East too has disappointed at this point, the Wizards, the Heat. While I think the Hornets have played, you know, probably to the upper end of where we thought they could be, you know, mm-hmm. I think Spencer, I forget what we said. I think we said maybe like 45 games was this team's mm-hmm. ceiling, and you know, I think I would probably stick with that. You know, and they've also been really healthy so far too, which helps. You know, Zeller is always a guy who could go out, and we talked about how they don't have much at center. So yeah, but I think the greater thing that you can look at is just that, you know, the rest of these teams really are all underperforming at this point. So the Hornets have got to feel pretty good about that, and you know, I don't see them. You know, maybe I could see them taking a team like the Bucks or the Sixers to six. You know, that's probably where I see the ceiling at this point.
Yeah, I kind of favor the Sixers matchup for whatever reason. I think that we've, you know, played them well over the Bucks, maybe, over the Bucks.
Well, he's an awesome – actually, you know what? Kemba is a really good matchup against either the Bucks or the Sixers because both those teams have these big centers that they want to leave back.
Yep.
And the Hornets, you mentioned they shoot a lot of above the break threes. That's what the Bucks give up. Right. You know, we've seen Kemba have big games against them. You know, and Mike Budenholzer is not, he's a good coach, he's not like the most reactive coach in the world to, you know, to change up the strategy or to do more switching or go with Giannis at center or that stuff. I mean, I think that stuff that could really give the Hornets problems, but you know, I'm not sure if he's going to go there. So, you know, these teams that if Kemba can continue to shoot it pretty well and gets hot for a series, you know, I think they could give some of these teams some difficulty, these teams that want to just lay the center back and pick and roll and protect the basket.
Philadelphia without Covington is like a big help too. I mean, he's given Kemba fits in some of their matchups this season and last season. Basketball Reference is like a little more, their algo is like a little more friendly to the Hornets, still has them finishing sixth in the East, but with a you know, almost a 99% chance of making the playoffs, and Basketball Reference has them as a 45 win team with a first round matchup against Boston. You know, I don't like I don't like the Hornets' odds in any of these first round matchups, especially if they're, you know, it seems so unlikely they get to the four. You know, I think they're sort of locked in at 6-8, which means they're going to be heavy underdogs and, you know, clearly not the hosting a first round series. So, you know, I mean, the ceiling for them, playoff team that, you know, maybe can they win a game or two, maybe. you know, I feel at some point Boston will sort of get their stuff in gear and start to play even better. And the thought of Boston, like a fired up, healthy Boston team against Charlotte in the first round is not ideal. But yeah, you know, again, a big part of this too is assuming that they stay healthy. Like Nate said, they really haven't dealt with that many injuries. And I kind of think like one of the biggest weaknesses for this Hornets team is just like the margin of error. Like they just don't really, there really is none. If they lose any of those top six or seven guys, especially Kemba or Cody for significant time, they're toast. I mean, the starters have played 334 minutes this season, net rating of +6. That's the most minutes of any lineup in the NBA this year.
Oh.
You think if you pull out one of those guys, it just gets really dicey really quickly.
Yep, and that's what we talked about on your pod, you know, earlier in the year before the season, Nate, is that their floor is just so low, because if Kemba gets hurt, if something happens, I mean, even now, 14-13, I mean, knock on wood, if he were to go down in the next game, I mean, they could be easily have a top team. Five pick, right,
yeah.
Before the end of the year, like, because they're nothing without Kemba, so the floor is still very, very low.
Another question, if the Hornets kind of keep competing and are in that 6th, 7th range, do you see the Hornets making a trade to improve the roster? And if so, do you see any positions of need? I think the Hornets roster, you know, salary-wise, it's going to be hard to make some trades just in terms of trades that are worthwhile and getting pieces back. But, Nate, do you see any areas in which they can improve, or do you see them just kind of standing pat?
Yeah, I mean, I think they could use that, like, you know, a real good defensive center, you know, maybe like I wouldn't see them doing more than, you know, something along like, you know, second rounder type of thing. I mean, they don't have a ton of breathing space right now. Actually, let me get their sheet open right now to see where they are in relation to the tax. But
3.5 under, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, maybe – and they don't have a lot of kind of spare filler salary on expiring contracts that they're not really using. I mean, maybe like Kaminsky would be someone like that, you know, like Kaminsky for Dwayne Dedwin and a second round pick or something, you know, like that might be just get one guy with a little bit more athleticism, maybe someone who can roll to the basket, provide a little vertical spacing. That's probably the biggest addressable need that I see for them at this point. I mean, they don't, you mentioned that with the surprising depth that they've shown this season, you know, there aren't really any necessarily glaring holes. I mean, maybe another combo forward type, but you know, they got MKG there as a backup. You know, he's been pretty good. Marvin Williams, if he goes down, they would really miss him for sure.
Yeah.
Ooh, boy. You know, that's another one, just that they don't really have another stretch four option who can also like be as good of a defensive player as Marvin is. So, but you know, that he's a pretty good player. You're not going to just find that. And I don't think they would wade into the giving up a future first rounder approach, especially with the uncertainty with Kemba. And I don't think, you know, Kemba is quite on the level of an Anthony Davis or something where it's like, oh man, like we got to do well this year to impress him enough. So he stays. I mean, I think if they offer him the full boat, you know, if that's not enough to get him to stay, like that, nothing's going to, when you consider, you know, he's not quite at the stature of someone like AD or, you know, Giannis will be in that position in a couple of years. Kawhi Leonard.
Yep. Well, that kind of actually segues us to the next question. So when we talk about Kemba staying in Charlotte, which he's saying all the right things, love Charlotte, you know, wants to be here. Hope Charlotte just makes the offer when, you know, the clock strikes midnight and we can all go home happy. But there's this overlooming possibility of him being an all NBA player. And Brian, you told me the number, cause I forget it now. Remind me, what's that all NBA number? Nate probably knows.
Yeah. If he hits it, it would be 5 years, $221 million for Kemba Walker. If he hits all NBA this season.
So, Nate, in that scenario, let's just say Kemba just keeps it up, almost just accelerates, you know, his foot on the gas from here on out, and he makes first team All-NBA. What does Charlotte do in that scenario? Because, I mean, like what does that conversation look like? Because at this point, I think we know he wants to stay in Charlotte. Charlotte obviously wants to keep him. But that's so much more money than he could make. It's just his five-year max that Charlotte could offer him without All-NBA. Like, that just really muddies the water when it comes to that free agency conversation.
Yeah, it does to some degree, But it's also when you consider his age, he's going to be 29 this offseason, I believe. To get the fifth year and the number on that fifth year, even if he doesn't get the designated player, would still be $43 million. You know, that's already so much more. And yeah. You know, if you look at that, that's his age 33, 34 season. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
you know, that's already so much more. I mean, obviously, giving that contract would be a disaster, you know, and I think if he now it, you mentioned it could muddy the waters. Maybe it's like, hey, I'm eligible for this. You're not going to give it to me. You know, I'm just upset. I'm going to leave. Maybe that's the case. But I think there's plenty of negotiating room between that full boat, $221 million, which would have a $50.4 million salary in the 2023-24 season.
Good Lord.
And I think they've also maybe to some degree learned their lesson on these five-year deals from Batum as well. You know, I think they'll be a little bit more gun-shy, you would hope. Good point. And so it's still – but it's still – the regular five-year deal is just so much more than what anyone else can offer that, yeah, if he does make All-NBA, it's going to make things a little more difficult. Maybe they would give him a little bit of a bump over, you know, because it doesn't have to be the full $221 million necessarily. You know, it can be at least 30%, but no more than 35% of the salary cap. And you might even be able to have some non-guarantees on the end of there or something that could kind of make it a little bit more team-friendly and palatable, you know, based on games played or something, you know, sort of similar to like Mike Conley's contract right now. But it's obviously very difficult, especially, you know, the sixth seed, you could say maybe, all right, you know, Kemba's performance starts to drop off a little bit, but, you know, Monk and Bridges continue to improve. And but, you know, other than that, you know, that's probably not going to counteract, you know, maybe you get a little more out of Lamb, but he's going to be a free agent also.
Yeah.
So what do you really, like, what is the way to improve beyond the 60?
Right.
I think you have to conclude that in the years going forward, unless they have another huge hit in the draft, that, you know, the 60 is about as good as you're going to do. And that's maybe that'll last a couple of years. And then Kemba falls off enough that you're kind of down it in the lottery again. I mean, maybe you could say, well, you know, it makes sense to re-sign him because we could trade him again if we kind of fall out of contention. But you're falling out of contention because he's not that good anymore and he's overpaid. So that probably isn't going to work either. I mean, we've been talking about this for a year and a half now of just, you know, what a conundrum this is.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, if Charlotte was going to do anything, it was this time last year. I mean,
sure.
I think I speak for all three of us that we were ready for a trade. I mean, we supported it. I don't backtrack on that at all. I think that's what Charlotte should have done. But, you know, now, I mean, look, you can't understand it until you're here and until you're a fan of Hornets basketball or just Charlotte sports in general, frankly. But, I mean, he's a freaking folk hero in this town. And and if they do not re-sign him, like, you know, Bill Simmons says, like, if New Orleans doesn't re-sign Anthony Davis, what's the point of basketball in New Orleans anymore? And I think he's right. And I think the same thing's true in Charlotte. Like, if they don't sign, and I know that's not the right way to do business, right? Mm-hmm. And I know it's not how you build a team to win over time. But if Kemba Walker's not back here next year under contract, what's the point of basketball in Charlotte? Because there is literally nothing to look at and smile. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, at least for a couple of years, right? I mean, because the thing about that sort of thinking is, and I know you guys know this, but it's rebuilding, you know, when you're a team in the situation as the Hornets, ultimately you don't have a choice of whether you're going to rebuild or not. Like, you're going to have to, right? I mean, this is, and you know, maybe they'll be kind of in between 35 and 45 wins for another couple of years. And maybe you could say, all right, you know, that, like, that in a market like Charlotte, that has enough value to where, you know, it's, that's worth it, right? You know, but you're still going to have to pay the piper on the back end of that. And so your kind of question is like, all right, would we rather have another couple of years of 35, 45 wins, and now we really are going to go into a deep depression, or are we going to kind of embrace the rebuild, steer into it with the hope that it'll be shorter and we'll get better players and you can get out of it more quickly, as opposed to, all right, we'll maintain this mediocrity for a couple more years and now we're really going to have a long rebuild, as opposed to getting out of it more quickly. You know, that's kind of the way I think about it sometimes.
Well, at least they have a super patient owner in Michael Jordan. That'll be down to sit through a lengthy and trying rebuild in the Queen City.
Yeah, thanks for not asking me about like him like head tapping Malik Monk yesterday.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Why was that such a big deal? Why was that such a big deal?
I mean, if it wasn't Jordan, it would be a bigger deal, right?
Yeah,
like if it wasn't,
if it was Mark Cuban. Yes. Then, yeah, I mean, it would be totally out of line. But, like, Michael Jordan, he's there. He's, like, he's the owner. He's been around with the guy. He's got enough to kind of just do that. Like, it's not that big of a deal.
He did that to Lamb a couple seasons ago, I feel like.
Yeah, yes, he did. He did. And, like, look, if the owner can come play one-on-one with the team in practice, then, like, I guess we're just, like, and he can still do that, then we'll just give him a pass for this too. I thought that was some, I don't know, you got to drive the like 24-hour content cycle, and with it being MJ, ESPN could latch on to it pretty quickly.
It was too easy. It really was. Well, look, Nate, we really appreciate you coming on. That was awesome. I think somehow, some way, we kept this thing close to 40 minutes, I guess, Richie, and that's a minor miracle for us, so, especially when we get a fourth body in here. But thanks again, man. Great stuff. What you're doing with the Dunked On podcast with Danny, and I mean, it's just all awesome. I listen all the time. I know Richie and Brian do too. Nate, where can we find you? What do you have coming up? I mean, what do you have to plug here?
Yeah, well, Nate Duncan NBA is the Twitter handle, and we're doing the NBA cast, which is basically a live play-by-play. If you mute your TV and sync up with us, is kind of the idea. There's a little bit of a barrier to entry. You know, we're hopeful that eventually someday the NBA will open up casting to, and we can actually show the game at the same time. But if you're in a position with a DVR where you can kind of pause it, sync up with us, we do it once a week during the regular year, and then we do it pretty much every night during the playoffs that there isn't a Warriors home game.
All right, Nate. Well, look, thanks again, man, and we'll talk again here soon, I'm sure.
All right, I'll be your fourth body anytime, guys.
Appreciate it, Nate.
All right, guys, that was episode 83, a little bonus episode on a Friday morning for you guys. Hope you enjoyed it. Nate Duncan does a great job with the Dunked On podcast, along with Danny LaRue. Again, we just got to take a little 10,000 foot view of where the Hornets season is right now, where a lot of people think, like Nate, you know, a national guy covering this league, where he thinks it's going. So hope you enjoy it. Have a great Christmas, because I'm not sure, Richie and Brian, if we will see you before then or not. I don't know if we've made that decision, but if we don't see you before then, have a Merry Christmas and go Hornets.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment, and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.